Welcome to City Minutes. I'm Andrew Carter, and today I'm joined by my colleague Anthony Breach from the Centre for Cities and Ivan Tennant from GL Hearn. We're going to set out some of the main findings and the policy recommendations from our latest report, which we've published in partnership with GL Hearn. So Anthony, turning to you first, what's the focus of the report? What's the report looking at?
So over the past couple of years, we've been doing more research looking at the links between the planning system and the housing crisis. There is a mismatch across cities between supply and demand. Although there are some expensive cities building lots of new homes, like Exeter, and some low-demand cities building very little, many others are out of balance. So some expensive cities like Oxford, Brighton, and Bournemouth are also building very few new homes, worsening their housing crises. But perhaps even more strangely, there are some cities which have rather low demand for housing, but very high supply, like Wakefield and Telford. We think there are deep-seated problems with the planning system that disconnects local supply from local demand in this way, fueling the housing crisis. For this to be true, though, the planning system must not just be shaping the supply of new homes between cities, but within them as well. Our most recent piece of work digs into this problem, and one of the focuses are the cities which experience that mismatch in supply demand. So cities like high demand cities like Brighton with low supply, and lower demand cities like Wakefield with high supply. And what we find is that across all of the cities in England and Wales, you can notionally distinguish between three different areas in a city: the city centre, the existing already built up suburbs, and the outskirts of the suburbs, including undeveloped greenfield areas. We looked at how supply of new homes changed in each of these neighbourhoods from 2011 to the middle of 2019.
So Ivan, the report shines a spotlight on, you know, in particular the role of the suburbs bit of our cities and their contribution to the housing issue. Why is this a problem that we should really be thinking about and focusing on?
Well, I think the study reaches some very interesting conclusions and identifies some interesting phenomena within the way housing supply within cities, different kinds of cities, happens in practice. And I think the reality is that development tends to follow a path of least resistance, really. It avoids the complexity, the difficulty of brownfield sites, of smaller sites, which tend to be typically would be within either inner city or suburban environments, and tends to end up with large strategic sites on the edges of cities. And I think that will become a problem. I think as local authorities, as these parts of local authorities become exhausted in terms of their capacity to absorb development, so we will need to look harder at other parts of cities, which at the moment seem to be, to use the word in the report, dormant. So I think the report does talk about the housing crisis, and again, one of its strengths, I think, is that it looks at five very different cities with different challenges in terms of housing supply: Exeter, Wakefield, Brighton, Manchester, and London. And I think this immediately invites a question about how to resolve the housing crisis as it plays out within different parts of the country, with really quite different challenges in terms of housing supply.
Okay, very good. So Anthony, just turn back to you. What do we find when we looked across our urban areas, and particularly what was going on in their suburbs? What did we find?
So there are two main findings from the report, and they show that the planning system really is shaping the supply of housing within cities. The first is that the total supply of housing, which cities achieve, relies upon a very small number of new neighbourhoods. 45% of all new homes within cities are built within just 4% of all suburban neighbourhoods, and these suburban neighbourhoods are building more than 25 homes a year. And these, what we call intensive neighbourhoods, are concentrated in city centres and on the outskirts of cities. So in city centres, these are often new high-rise buildings, student accommodation, office conversions, and so-called luxury apartments. But on the outskirts, these intensive neighbourhoods, which are supplying more than 25 houses a year, are new urban extensions and housing estates, and they're providing the bulk of new supply within cities. And this is really why some lower demand cities like Telford are building a lot. Their local planners allocated lots of sites in this way. The other main finding from the report, the second finding, is that across all of our cities, large parts of the existing built-up suburbs are providing almost no new homes. Half of all suburban neighbourhoods are building less than one house a year and contribute to just 2% of new housing supply. But even more than that, a fifth of all neighbourhoods build zero houses at all. So this is why some high-demand cities like Oxford have such low supply. Although they have very few or even zero intensive neighbourhoods, which are building at a very high rate, the rest of their suburbs are not picking up the slack which remains.
Thanks, Anthony. Ivan, coming back to you, your reflections on the findings and how we begin to think about them?
Well, I think it's very interesting that I find the concept of the intensification of neighbourhoods interesting, and that there are, you know, local authorities perhaps do need to start thinking about certain neighbourhoods that have the potential to yield more housing. Perhaps looking at some of these neighbourhoods elsewhere, Anthony's 4% that seem to be producing making a significant contribution to housing supply. What do these neighbourhoods look like? What is it about them that makes the land within them more suitable, more feasible, more deliverable? Can other local authorities learn from this experience of some local authorities achieving relative success in yielding homes from these what at face value would seem quite challenging urban environments? I think there is, however, important note that I would strike, which is the importance of planning expertise and planning knowledge in helping to solve this problem. It seems to me that it is first and foremost a matter of the appetite that developers have for risk and essentially de-risking, supporting the private sector in tackling some of these sites. And certainly in the era of the housing delivery test in which we now live, in which local authorities more than ever need to think about how to accelerate the supply of housing, that local authorities, their attention is focused on these matters, and they are starting to think about how they can support the private sector in that way. But perhaps the other part of this is of course local opposition, and I think one of the key issues is, you know, the high, relatively high proportion of homes in these suburban parts of cities that are owner-occupied. These people will have a greater capacity, perhaps, to resist development that is being proposed, and how local authorities can offer provide the leadership to essentially broadcast the benefits of development and bring those communities with them. And it seems to me the local authority planning departments are ideally placed to balance those sorts of issues, essentially managing stakeholders and supporting the various actors in doing their job more effectively.
Okay, so let's turn to what needs to change. We've begun to hint at some of the things that we may need to address. Coming back to you, Anthony.
So I think to tackle that first question of how do we build more housing in the suburbs specifically, I think we have to emphasise that what the report finds is that there's a particular element that's down to the design of the planning system, so it's institutional setup. So its discretionary nature makes redevelopment of the existing housing stock very risky for developers because their costs are so upfront and the process is so uncertain. So think about it from their perspective, that they have to spend time and money searching for homeowners adjacent to each other to sell. They then have to spend time and money actually acquiring the properties. They then have to spend time and money coming up with a scheme which fits that site. But it may be the case that the scheme is still denied planning permission, even if it complies with the local plan, because the system is so discretionary. So to kind of answer that first question of how do we increase development within the suburbs, we do need, as Ivan was saying, to reduce risk in the planning process. We need to make it more certain and more predictable. Now, the way that could be done, we could either go for a very kind of large, kind of big systemic reform of how the planning system works. If we changed to a flexible zoning system, such as in Japan or in parts of the United States, where if you propose something which complied with the building regulations and with the local plan, legally you had to be granted planning permission. So that would definitely increase kind of suburban redevelopment. Something kind of smaller scale or incremental, such as implementing suburban design guides, like Croydon Local Authority has done, might also be a way of achieving a small increase in suburban redevelopment within the system that we have. But in terms of that broad problem of how do we increase supply in the cities which have the greatest housing shortages, so those very expensive cities which just aren't building enough homes, we also need to think about how do we introduce more land into the system and make it available for development. So that means around cities like Oxford, it means around cities like London, it means really having the political courage and the leadership to start thinking about greenbelt reform and greenbelt release. And you know, we really shouldn't be thinking about this in terms of it's either suburban redevelopment or it is greenbelt release. We need to be thinking about how do we have a responsive and flexible planning system and housing policy so that supply can respond to demand across all parts of the city, including the outskirts, in those cities which have successful economies and are seeing urban growth as well.
Yeah, but I think the report really cites most of its recommendations in the realm of what I would call the planning balance. And I think, I would also say that since 2012, we've had a substantial deregulation of the housing market, of the planning system. And the mechanism of the housing delivery test does mean that if a local authority is not meeting its evidenced housing need, then they need to find more land to bring into their housing supply. And if things seriously fall back, they will face themselves in what's called presumption territory, so in the presumption of sustainable development, essentially losing to a large degree control of their planning, of the planning process in their area. And to cite the example of Brighton that the report looks at, Brighton did fail the housing delivery test. That means that they haven't delivered, the area hasn't seen sufficient delivery of homes to meet evidence need over the previous 3 years. That means that they will, as a local authority, need to find more housing land. So there is a mechanism in place that places a pressure on local authorities to address exactly the kind of issues that the report raises. Now, because it is about a balance, where there are statutory and political pressures that are become more acute, so the opposition, the resisting political and social forces that might be preventing local authorities from grasping this particular problem difficult to bring forward sites in suburban neighbourhoods will shift, and I would hope that local authorities would start to look much more closely and carefully at these sorts of sites. Where I would agree with the report, and I think it's very thoughtful in this area, is looking at where there are opportunities to introduce flexibilities, whether, let's say, a certain neighbourhood manifestly has the capacity to deliver more housing. It is one of these neighbourhoods of intensification, if you like. Where it has that capacity to look carefully at housing zones, look carefully at planning flexibilities. It does mention local development orders, and I think that is they are quite well tailored to respond to the sort of planning issues that could arise within these suburban neighbourhoods, where very often the style of the residential development and housing is quite similar. So a local development order which puts in place a design code which, if met, would allow development to go forward. It is a form of rules-based as opposed to discretionary planning. These sorts of measures, I think, are appropriate. And I would hope that as a result of this study, they'd be looked at more carefully.
Excellent. My thanks to Anthony and to Ivan. You can find all the details on the report and all the complementary and supplementary material on our website, centrefortcities.org. Thanks very much.